Well, the Dodgers come back and defeat the Marlins tonight by a final score of 10-6. Welcome to Dodger Talk. David Vasse with you until 11 o'clock tonight. Ned Coletti will be joining us at the bottom of the hour live from the Sportsnet LA studios. We're taking your phone calls until 11 o'clock tonight right here on AM570 LA Sports. The Dodgers defeat the Marlins 10-6, but it wasn't pretty. That eighth inning in particular, not pretty. The Dodger defense letting them down again. Corey Seager dropping a foul ball right in front of the camera well by the Dodger dugout, which extended the Granderson at bat, which allowed him to double. That should have been an out. And then Kike Hernandez trying to help out Pedro Baez and the Dodgers to get out of that inning by forcing a throw that would have turned a double play. Ill-advised throw because he wasn't going to be able to get out the runner, Harold Ramirez, but that was kind of a worst-case scenario because not only does Kike throw the ball late and throw it errant, but it goes into the first base camera well, which not only allowed the lead runner to score, which was 6-5 at that point, and then the ball goes into the camera well, which allows the tying run to score. So that was the worst case scenario right there. And the Dodgers, in case you don't realize this, have not been very good with the glove, and Dave Roberts acknowledged that on the last road trip. The Dodgers now have made at least two errors in seven straight games, and they have 32 errors in their last 21 games. That won't get it done, as the great Stu Lance would say. 866-987-2570. But what will get it done is the overwhelming talent the Dodgers have. Matt Beatty tonight, I mean, how many teams would love to have Matt Beatty and he gets shuttled back and forth from Oklahoma City to the major leagues? He would be a mainstay in this Marlins lineup who are on pace to lose 101 games. The Dodgers just have so much talent, not only here at the major league level, but also at the minor league level. And Andrew Friedman has really provided Dave Roberts with a bunch of talent over the last 3 or 4 years, and it continues this season. And the Dodgers were able to use that talent to defeat the Marlins tonight by a final score of 10-6. It's a shame Clayton Kershaw didn't get the win tonight because he left the game leading 6-1, and he did not give up a run. He only gave up two hits, and he struck out 10 hitters for the first time this season. So that's a little disappointing. Plus, he even drove in a run. I know he's happy about that, his first RBI of the season, and I'm sure he's happy the Dodgers pulled out this win. A little disappointed, though, that he did not get the win himself, and the game went sideways in the eighth inning. So let's hear from the Dodger ace. He's downstairs at the podium.
Yeah, there was a lot of positives. Yeah, able to get going pretty quick. Felt like my stuff was there early. And yeah, it was a good day for the most part.
Take away anything in particular that was working better for you this time than your last outing?
I think my slider was probably a little bit better today, for sure. Maybe even fastball command, too, is a little bit better today, for sure. So, really just stuff in general, a little bit more crisp today, which was great.
Did you feel like you had good swing and miss stuff today? I mean, the punch-outs were evident.
Yeah, I think my slider had some decent depth, for sure, early. And then, you know, curveball mixed in there for the most part. Didn't throw as many strikes as I maybe would have liked with it. But then, you know, mix it up, a little bit creative. Barnsley did a great job and able to get some more punch-outs than usual, which is good.
Did you have much depth? Campaigned for it to stay in there?
Yeah, I wanted to stay in. You know, I think, outcome of the game aside, I would have liked to have stayed in. You know, I think, you know, Doc's decision, obviously, and you can't, you know, the results are what it is, and we ended up winning the game, so that's all great. I think, you know, I just, knowing what's ahead, and with two off days coming up, felt like it was a good time to maybe get one more in. But, you know, Doc's always got the bigger picture in mind, which you can't argue with.
Clayton Kershaw only threw 97 pitches tonight in six innings of work, and the two hits he gave up came in the fourth inning tonight. So he was really cruising, and when he said he had his stuff working early, he wasn't exaggerating. He struck out 7 of the first 9 Marlins he faced, so he was dominant right with the first pitch, and that was great to see for the Dodgers. Unfortunately, Clayton does not get the win, but the team does, 10-6 over the Marlins. 866-987-2570. Let's go out to Westlake. David, you're on Dodger Talk. Hi, David.
David, how are you?
Doing good, thank you.
Just real quick, I think you do such a great job, David. I just love the camaraderie and relationships you have with the players. It just makes us fans feel that much closer to the players as well. So thank you for that.
Oh, that's that's what I try to do. So I'm glad to hear that.
Absolutely. I want to talk about defense. Obviously, you know, as you know, defense and pitching win championships. And I got to give Corey Seager a pass. He's been out for a while. We know he's got a great glove. He'll be fine. My biggest fear is this experiment that they keep doing with Jock Peterson at first. And to me, the experiment that they should be continuing to work on is Muncy at first base, because he is still a work in progress at first base. And in October, come playoffs, I don't see anywhere else that I would put Muncy than first base. And when we get to the World Series, he's got to be the DH. I think that we've got to lay off Peterson playing first base and just give all the reps to Muncy, because he is not a natural first baseman by any means. And I also feel that you had a caller the other day saying, who would you give up for bullpen? And honestly, Dave, I think if you ask a 9 out of 10 Dodger fans, they would be willing to give up our top prospects for one World Series ring. It's been too long, too many years. I would be more than happy with a rebuild if we can win it all this year. And that's my honest opinion.
All right, David, thank you for the phone call. And the person you're talking about, or the pitcher you're talking about, is Felipe Vasquez. He's under team control, very team-friendly contract for the next 3 years, and it definitely would take some of the Dodgers' best minor league players to be able to pull off a trade. I don't see the Dodgers trading Will Smith, Gavin Lux, or Dustin May, but Keibert Ruiz, if you're going all in with Will Smith, and also you may not be aware, the Dodgers also have two very young catchers behind Will Smith and Keibert Ruiz that they're very high on. So it can be done. The Dodgers have a lot of talent and depth in their minor leagues, and we'll see whether or not the Pirates are willing to deal Vasquez, because they're under no pressure to do that. They can afford his contract and maybe get more for him during the offseason. So we'll see how it plays out. And by the way, the Dodgers don't need just Felipe Vasquez. They probably need to pull off a couple of trades to get a left-handed reliever in that bullpen, and maybe even a right-hander to help out that bullpen as well. So Felipe Vasquez definitely would take them to another level, but I could see the Dodgers accomplishing the same goal without being able to trade for Vasquez. Let's go out to Larry, who is at the game tonight. Hi, Larry. You're on Dodger Talk with David Vasse.
Great to talk to you, David. You do a great job. I agree with the first caller with the experiment with Jock Peterson at first base. At what point is Roberts going to give Beatty the nod at first base? The guy can hit. He's clutch. We all like Jock. We all like his, you know, leadoff home runs. But has Jock really improved that much? At some point, pass the torch. Let's give it to Beatty. Find someone else to lead off the game. I don't think they're going to win a World Series with Jock Peterson as the leadoff hitter.
Jock Peterson's had some pretty big World Series games, Larry. You can't really pin the Dodgers' shortcomings on him in the World Series the last 2 years. He's actually been one of the more productive offensive players on a team that really hasn't hit that well in the last two World Series.
Is a leadoff guy, is that the guy you want really hitting home runs? Bat Jock fifth, sixth, or seventh. He doesn't take a lot of pitches.
Yeah, he does.
He's a natural leadoff hitter.
Larry, he takes some pitches tonight. He was taking some good at bats, and the focus just needs to be there at bat in, at bat out. But you know, I can understand why some might be asking for Matt Beatty to get more time, but he's kind of in the same boat as Max Muncy. Defense is not his strongest quality, and the Dodgers are trying to find either left field or first base for him, trying to figure out which one is his better position. And David from Westlake brought up a good point. If Max Muncy is going to be your first baseman in the National League playoffs before you get to the DH, yeah, get him some reps out there. But the Dodgers value Jock being at the top of the order against right-handed pitching. He has now 22 home runs, including 16 career leadoff home runs. So that's the value. He gives you the potential of giving you a lead right away. And with the Dodgers pitching, that's a significant advantage. 866-987-2570. Let's go out to Brad, who is at the game tonight. Hi, Brad. You're on Dodger Talk.
Hey, David. How are you? What a fun game tonight. What a great ceremony to start You know, Fernando was such a presence in my youth and coming to the Dodger games and watching him. And it was really great to see his family out there. And I love that he's a part of the Dodger family and works with Jaime on the radio and all of that.
Actually works with Pepe Enanguez on the TV now. He did work with Jaime. Now he's a TV star.
Wow, very cool. And you know, I mean, I hear everybody wanting to kind of tweak everything, you know? I mean, we're getting to be like a, you know, sailboat racing here where we're going to, like, you know, do two cranks this way and two cranks that way. And I like Jock leading off, and I like Matt Beatty coming in, and certainly the talent is there. I think where we, you know, the thing we don't want to talk about is what's going on in the bullpen and how we're taking low-leverage situations and turning them into high-leverage situations and seeing what everybody's got. I've really been disappointed with Caleb Ferguson lately. And you know, and I never know exactly what the decisions are. Like, you know, Chargois looked great. Why not give him another inning? I don't know exactly what all those choices are made by, how many pitches and, you know, who's doing what. But I'd just love to see us tighten that up and the leather in the field. And gosh, I think we just run the table on everybody.
All right, Brad, thank you for the phone call. Well, there's no excuse, really. Whoever you bring in, the Dodgers, Yimi Garcia, Caleb Ferguson, they need to be able to get those outs. A 6-1 lead against the Marlins, you shouldn't be giving those leads up. And the defense did not help them. Corey Seager dropping that foul ball on the third base camera well did not help Caleb Ferguson out. And Ferguson has got to throw strikes, and he's got to be able to have confidence in his curveball. Dave Roberts, I asked him about that yesterday. He doesn't know why he doesn't have confidence in his curveball, but he only throws two pitches. And if he can't get the curveball over, it helps the opposing hitters, because all they're doing is sitting on 95 miles an hour. And these days in the big leagues, guys can hit 95 miles an hour if they're waiting for that. 866-987-2570. I wanted to share part of my conversation with Matt Beatty yesterday. I think it's really interesting the way he prepares for his at-bats, whether it's as a pinch hitter or coming off the bench in a double switch or even starting a game. Because when the Dodgers were in Philadelphia, he knew he was going to be facing Hector Neris in that spot. And he put on the virtual reality headset, which shows the opposing pitcher in that ballpark and helps the hitter see the release point of where the pitcher is coming from in that particular ballpark. So I was curious what Matt is using and how he's using that virtual reality, which is becoming more and more popular around the Dodgers batting cage.
Once a day, at least, just to kind of get timing down, just see a ball coming at you a little bit. You know, obviously that's not the real thing, but it doesn't hurt getting in there and seeing what the pitcher has or how the ball's moving. And, you know, it has his wind up from the stretch, everything like that, so you can get your timing down.
When you put on the virtual reality, will you have a bat in your hand, or you'll just simulate having a bat in your hand?
I've got a controller in my hand that I use as a bat.
Okay.
But, yeah, no bat, just kind of get in my stance and kind of have my timing thing all ironed out.
Is this the first year you've been exposed to using that?
So last year at Instructs, they kind of had it at the Camelback facility, and I got on it a little bit and gave them some feedback, and I thought it was a really cool idea. And I don't know if this is the first year that it's been here at Dodger Stadium or not, but I think it's a really cool little technology thing that we have.
And that's Matt Beatty. A little insight into how he prepares to come up with those big home runs. He now has 5 on the season. Tonight, a go-ahead 3-run home run in the bottom of the 8th inning in a tied 6-6 game. And Matt Beatty is not the only Dodger that relies on that virtual reality. I know Corey Seager and A.J. Pollock were using it quite a bit during the time that they were on the injured list. So it helps some guys. I know some guys like Cody Bellinger and Kike Hernandez, they have told me in the past that they don't use it, they don't like it. So it works for some and it doesn't work for others. And that's kind of how hitting goes. Not every hitter is the same guy. You can't speak the same hitting language to the same hitters. So same with virtual reality. Some guys enjoy it. It helps them. Other guys say, you know what? It's not for me. And Matt Beatty, virtual reality is certainly working for him, because he has come up with some big hits already this season. 866-987-2570. Let's go out to Taylor in Redondo Beach. You're on with David Vasse, live from Dodger Stadium. Hi, Taylor.
Hey, Dave. I really appreciate all you do. I wanted to say, I was at the game tonight, and this is something I've been curious about, is you got Verdugo in left field, you got Bellinger in right field, and you got Jock Peterson at first. And I'm not trying to beat a dead horse, but what if you just brought Cody into first, put Verdugo in right, and then Jock back out in left? And for Bellinger, for how well he's hitting, I mean, I personally think there's a higher risk of him getting hurt running around out there in the outfield.
Yeah, they're trying to win him a Gold Glove in right field. They're trying to, you know, they have a 15-game lead, Taylor. They're trying to win him a Gold Glove in right field. And in the postseason, I believe you will see Cody Bellinger more at first base, especially in late and close games. So they have the ability to do that. They have a 15-game lead. He feels comfortable going out there every day, knowing that he's going to be a right fielder every day. So that's helping him. 866-987-2570. When we come back, Nick Coletti will join us from the Sportsnet LA studios. Also, you'll hear part of my conversation with Fernando Valenzuela and Rick Monday, who was teammates with Fernando when Fernando Mania exploded. We'll share his perspective as well. So a lot more to come as we get closer to the top of the hour. Dodgers beat the Marlins tonight 10-6 on AM570 LA Sports.
One ball, one strike, one out. Hernandez set at the belt. Runners lead, tied at six. Beatty with a fly ball to right. It is on its way, and it is a three-run home run. Matt Beatty.
Matt Beatty double switched in the top half of the eighth inning, gets his first at-bat, and is able to drive a ball for a three-run home run, a go-ahead three-run home run, as the Dodgers defeat the Marlins tonight 10-6. We'd like to congratulate John Harbor of Torrance. He correctly predicted three Dodger home runs tonight. John receives a $50 Daniel's Jewelers gift card. Go to am570lasports.com and use the keyword home run for your chance to play. Beatty with the three-run home run in the eighth inning. Turner hit another home run against the Marlins. He's hitting almost .380 against Miami ever since putting on a Dodger uniform. And Jock Peterson hit his 16th career leadoff home run tonight to help the Dodgers defeat Miami 10-6. Let's head out to the Sportsnet LA studios. That's where Ned Coletti is. And Ned, it wasn't pretty the final three innings, but the Dodgers got a big swing from Matt Beatty again to rescue them.
Boy, I tell you what, that eighth inning was a rugged inning, almost an hour long. Dodgers bullpen struggled, and defense struggled. They were fortunate; they were able to kind of stop the game, reset a little bit, and then Beatty, who's been terrific, been on base any situation, coming in late in games, pinch hitting, starting games, really came through big. He's got 24 RBIs and about 115 plate appearances. You prorate that out for a full season, that's over 100 RBIs for a year.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice luxury to have a guy like Matt Beatty where you could call and send back down because you have so much talent. That's first world problems right there in baseball, Ned, no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah, and he's been great. You know, it's not easy coming off the bench. It's not easy having maybe one at bat. It's not easy sitting for a long time. But every time I've talked to him, I can tell the kid grinds it out. He's got a good mind to him, and he really – he can focus. He can focus, and he can think, and he can execute all at the same time, and you're seeing great results.
The one thing that I'm not freaking out about is the Dodger bullpen, because we all know it's probably their Achilles heel. Not probably, it is. And I'm not going to judge this bullpen the way it's constructed right now. I'm going to wait, hold out judgment until August after the July 31st trade deadline because I'm a firm believer Andrew Friedman is going to deliver not one, maybe two additional arms to that bullpen. So I'm holding out judgment. We all know it's an issue, but I'm not going to freak out over it, especially since the Dodgers have a 15-game lead. So I really believe that the fans should pump the brakes and wait until after July 31st to freak out.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of stories yet to be told on how this season's going to go and what the roster is going to look like. You know, we talked about a little bit yesterday. You know, Urias is somebody that you know, he's used very judiciously at this point in the season. But you get to be later in the year, he may be a starting pitcher, he may be a bullpen guy. But you look at the stuff he's got and his ability to pitch. You know, that would change a bullpen if he's used more regularly in that situation as the season goes on. As Dave Roberts said postgame, you know, it's always a long view. Everything that they do, everything they manage, taking Clayton out after six innings tonight, after allowing just three base runners, a couple of hits, and a walk, you know, the long view is where it's at. And so I think that you can't really rush the judgment on, on this particular group and whether this particular group is even going to be the group. And I think also tonight, you know, the defense also was a little bit at fault there, too, in that inning. Baez made a great pitch, had a double play ball, but Kike looked like he was a little bit awkward at second base with his right foot on the outside part of the bag coming across it and bounced it into Muntz, who couldn't pick it out. But, you know, that cost a couple of runs right there, too, because that was a great pitch by Baez, double play ball. But as you look at it, you say, well, they gave up 5 runs in that inning. Yes, but the defense was also part of that.
Yeah, on that Kike play, it just seemed like he was trying to do too much right there because I don't think he had a great chance of getting Harold Ramirez because the ball was hit to his left side or his right side, and it was just an awkward play. Kind of reminded me what John Wooden always used to say, Ned, be quick but don't hurry, and that's what Kike was trying to do. He was hurrying that throw because he knew it could get the Dodgers out of the inning, but worst-case scenario, the tying run was able to score after the ball went into the camera well. 866-987-2570. Let's go out to the phones again. We've been taking some phone calls. Fans have been very down-to-earth, Ned, with very very sharp opinions and thoughts on tonight's game and on the season. So it's a good night in Los Angeles. Let's go out to Rancho Cucamonga. Anthony, you're on with Ned Colletti and David Vasse. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I love the show. I called last night. And
did I hang up on you?
No. We talked. We talked. Good. So they're all good. I'm with you. I'm not panicking with the bullpen. You know, we're, I think, 9th or 10th in the majors, which is, you know, going to be great. But, I'm of the opinion that we got to get another starter above anything. Because, like, let's say we get Stroman. We block another team like Houston or the Yankees getting him. Like,
I'm not worried about Marcus Stroman beating the Dodgers, Anthony. I'm not worried about Marcus Stroman. I think that's that's not a good take right there, Ned. Sorry. First caller, I was trying to impress you. I said it was a good night with the callers, and he's talking about Marcus Stroman.
Well, it's going to be a trade. It's not going to be a waiver situation anyway. So that'll depend on who wants to offer Toronto the most if they're going to trade him. So that's all fair game. Everybody's got a chance. The American League would have, if it was the olden days and he had an August 31st waiver deadline, yeah, then they're going to have a chance to claim ahead of the Dodgers, but that's gone. That ain't happening anymore.
Yeah, and the Dodgers' needs does not start with starting pitching. If they added another starter, depending on what they know about Rich Hill's condition, that's fine, but bullpen is where they need some help, and they know it. 866-987-2570. Let's go out to Irvine. Kevin, you're on with Ned Colletti and David Vasse. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, guys. I was going to mention that I wasn't disappointed that Kershaw only threw 97 pitches. And the reason being is last year, I think part of the problem with the Dodgers in the World Series, they started him the first game and he had pitched in relief for that one inning in Milwaukee. Got to just go easy on the innings. He pitched well.
Oh, sell hell for Kevin. Well, we're going to rewind all the way to Game 7 of last year's NLCS. The Dodgers have been, I think we've seen a pattern this year, Ned, with Clayton Kershaw. The Dodgers don't want him going over 100 pitches, no matter what the circumstances are. I know he said the Dodgers have 2 days off coming up next week, and it might have been a good opportunity to push it one more inning. But the Dodgers have been very consistent, not letting him go too much further than 100 pitches this season.
Well, I think it's not just Clayton. I think it's the entire staff, and I think it goes back to more than just this season, too. And I think it's very wise. When you've got the staff they've got, you've got the depth they've got, I think you can't be using the regular season where you're going to burn somebody down and you're gonna get everything you can out of them. I think you've seen it with a lot of pitchers on really good teams before you had really the decline in 200-inning seasons for starting pitching. You can go back to Madison Bumgarner and Wainwright and Carpenter and some of those St. Louis pitchers. They pitched 230, 240, 250 innings some years, including the postseason, and they took a step back. Verlander, same thing. For a little while, took a step back. Regained it the last couple years in Houston, but his stuff took a step back. Dodgers don't want to do that. You got to look at the Mets staff, went to the World Series a few years ago. That staff has yet to be the same. Young staff, had a lot of energy, a lot of vitality to it. Still could not make it happen the year after. So I think there's so many things that go into the thought process, including you've gotten six innings out of Clayton. You've got yourself a nice lead. Let him take a seat. Save that inning, that seventh inning. Save it for some other time in the season. You build that up over the course. He's made 17 starts. Let's say that in half of them, he could have went another inning. Well, you're saving him 8 to 10 innings right there. And you know what? You want those 8 or 10 innings to be sharp. You want him to be physically in a good spot as you get to October. So it's all part of the thought process, not just with Clayton, but you see it with everybody else, too, in the starting rotation.
Great.
And I think it's very wise. You got the players to do it. You should do it.
Great point, Ned. It's not just about tonight. It's not just about the next start. It's about the entire season. Hey, we want to remind Dodger fans that you have a great opportunity to meet All-Star Max Muncy on Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. at Vallarta Supermarket, located at 644 North Fair Oaks in Pasadena. It's brought to you by Chef Marito. And remember, the chef is you. Details at am570lasports.com. Well, Ned, before tonight's game, a great ceremony having Fernando Valenzuela inducted into the Legends of Dodger Baseball. We know what Fernando Mania meant at the time and the after effects positively of what Fernando Mania has meant to this fan base, and it was great to see him celebrated. And who knows more about Fernando Mania than one of his former teammates, Rick Monday, who was part of that 1981 championship team. And on the pregame show, he shared his perspective of being part of the Dodgers at the time Fernando burst on the scene in 1980.
And to set the scene, when we first met day one in spring training in Vero Beach, Florida, in the locker room, when Tommy Lasorda addressed us as he always did every day, first day of spring training, you could look around the locker room and see that this team was not going to be together for that much longer, for a lot of different reasons. Some guys were at the end of their contracts, but more importantly, from an organizational standpoint, there was a lot of very good young talent. It was right on the cusp of becoming stars, not just good players at the major league level, but with stars. So we knew this was probably going to be the last shot of this nucleus with that record-setting infield. And then if you look at the outfield and the catching, too, and the pitching, too, for that matter. So we leave spring training. Fernando is going to be out of the bullpen as a reliever because the four-man rotation in those years had already been established. However, Jerry Royce injured himself running in the outfield, I believe it was the day before the opener, and it was here against the Houston Astros. Well, instead of changing and altering the rest of the rotation, Tommy Lasorda pointed to Fernando, who was going to be again in the bullpen. Well, on opening day, Fernando is there. They raise the banner. We play the anthem. And all this young man out of a very remote part of Mexico, with a crowd here larger than the population of the entire county that he grew up in, pitched a complete game shutout against the Houston Astros and Joe Niekro. The Dodgers won it 2-0, and that was the beginning of just a wonderful, wonderful story.
And that was his former teammate, Rick Monday. Ned, you weren't with the Dodgers, obviously, at that time, but I'm sure you felt the shockwaves of Fernando Mania wherever you were across the country.
My first year, it was after his great 1981 season, Cy Young, Rookie of the Year, Silver Slugger, All-Star, fifth in the MVP voting. Tough for any position player to get that many votes, let alone a rookie. 1982 is when I began my baseball career with Chicago. And the Cubs team back then was not a very good team. Also did not sell out Wrigley Field like they do today. And so you had sparse crowds. I remember three crowds that were at capacity. One was opening day, as you would expect. One was the final day of the season where they had fan appreciation day and gave away a car or two. And the other day was May 30th. And that was the day the rookie sensation, 1 year removed, Fernando Valenzuela, pitched at Wrigley Field and shut out the Cubs 7-0. And I'd never forget the day. It was so much anticipation. He came into town, and he really manhandled that club. One player on that club, actually a couple players had two hits off him that day. One of them turned out to be a pretty good player. It was a second baseman. It was a third baseman that year named Ryan Sandberg, who ended up being MVP 2 years later and a Hall of Famer. But I remember Fernando very, very well. You know what? He had a he knew his craft at a very, very young age. A little bit like Urias, where when I saw Urias at 16 years old, obviously, when we signed him, And he had a feel for pitching and a knowledge that you really don't see from anybody who hasn't pitched in the big leagues for a while. But Fernando Valenzuela had it, as does Julio.
Yeah, and the one thing that you think about when you hear Fernando's name, you think about his signature pitch, the screwball. And it kind of reminds me of the sky hook for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That was, when you think about Kareem, you think about the sky hook. And not too many guys in the NBA today, in fact, not many at all, ever learn how to perfect that shot like Kareem did. And you don't see anybody throwing the screwball like Fernando did, or even come close to even attempting throwing a screwball. And Fernando, Ned, was on the pregame show, and I asked him whether or not anybody has ever asked him to teach them the screwball.
When you say screwball, you think of Fernando Valenzuela. Have you taught that pitch to anybody else? I know you're involved in the Mexican League. Has anybody ever asked you how to throw that pitch?
Yeah, they asked me, especially over there in Mexico, because it's more left-handers. Now, when I used to play, and they asked me, you know, how to grip the ball and little things, you know, by that pitch. And I tried to help them up, and they say it's hard. It's hard. Yeah, but, you know, it's like curveball or sliders, you know. You need to practice. You need to practice to do it and doing better. I think that's for not only for the screwball, but for any other stuff, any other pitcher.
And, you know, some pitchers that are looking for a second or third pitch, Ned, they got a resource right here in the booth. They might want to learn, they might want to get to know Fernando and learn how to throw that screwball.
That's a very, very difficult pitch. Very tough on the arm, too. Carl Hubbell's one of the great pitchers, Hall of Famer, that was really his bread and butter. And it's tough. Left-handed pitchers have a better chance at throwing it than right-handed pitchers for some reason. But it's very, very stressful on the elbow because it's really a backward motion almost. And you think about the stress of pitching, and then you add something right at the end of your delivery, right at the last minute. It's probably very tough to throw and very tough to stay healthy with. Fernando's very fortunate that he could throw it, and really stayed healthy for most of his career by doing it.
Ned, it's funny you bring up Carl Hubbell. They have two things in common then, because if Carl Hubbell's main pitch was the screwball like Fernando, they have something else in common because they were in the record books together and still are for striking out the most consecutive hitters in an All-Star game. Fernando tied Hubbell's record in the 86 All-Star game in Houston at the Astrodome, and the first of the five hitters that he struck out in a row was Marlins manager Don Mattingly. How about that?
That is incredible. Yeah, and I remember, you know, reading. I obviously wasn't there when Hubbell pitched, but
really?
I remember reading. He struck out five Hall of Famers Hubbell struck out.
We've had people call and ask about the 27 Yankees. So, you know, Hubbell did that in 1934.
Yeah, well, I didn't see the 27 Yankees either, although I have read about them. But, yeah, that was that's interesting that they would be tied together in All-Star history as well.
866-987-2570. Dodgers beat the Marlins tonight 10-6. Let's go back out to the phones. Bill in Irvine, you're on with Ned and David. Hi, Bill.
Hi, guys. Well, that was interesting hearing that Bellinger indeed could shore up first base, because a few weeks ago, or maybe it was a month ago, there was worries that it was more of a risk to have him there because of hurting the shoulder. But if that's in good shape and indeed he could shore up the defense, that would be very encouraging. And my question is there anything that's possible for second base? I know it's tricky because I know Taylor's out and he can play there. Is there something, I know they're emphasizing much of the weight on the deadline for relief pitchers and remotely a starter, but is there any way second base can play into that, or would it come from within?
All right, thanks for the phone call, Bill. There's only one second baseman I would want over the group of guys the Dodgers are using over there, and that's Whit Merrifield from the Royals, and I don't know if he could be had. But second base seems to be a position the Dodgers can hold down. Everybody talks about Max Muncy, Ned. Second base might be his best position.
Yeah, and I think that they have enough coverage. I think the offense and the defense is fine. I think, as we talk about many times on the show, I think the bullpen is the area that probably needs to be sorted out a little bit. and you haven't have enough starting pitching. And I think that that could come from another deal. That could come from moving your starters into the bullpen, a couple of them here and there. It could come from Julio. It could come from somebody who's sitting at AAA right now and pitching great. So a lot of different choices. I think the I think second base is fine. I think that you have different combinations. As long as you keep this group healthy, you're going to have a lot of different choices there. All of them are capable. And as you say, Max Muncy's become a pretty good second baseman, something that he didn't have a whole lot of experience at prior to becoming a Dodger, but somebody that has taken to it pretty well. And I think there's enough coverage there. I'm not worried about the offense. I'm not worried about how they approach their at-bats. I think they're as good as anybody in the game. I don't think there's anybody as good as they are, actually. So I think the offense, defense has been a little bit lackluster lately. I think seven straight games with two or more errors. Yeah. I think that's a stage.
That's
part of the deal. But I do think that they should be fine with that situation. I would spend a little bit more time on the pitching staff.
Yeah, not only seven straight games with at least two errors, but also 32 errors in their last 21 games. So they are definitely in a defensive slump. In particular, Corey Seager, four errors in his last five games. So I've heard players say they do go through defensive slumps. So hopefully the Dodgers, by the time September rolls around, are sharp again defensively, because they do value it, Ned. It's not like the Dodgers don't value it.
Well, hey, you got to be able to pick the ball up. And defense is huge. You've got to be able to pitch. You've got to be able to play defense. That's how you win championships. And every time you do make an error, typically you're giving somebody either 90 feet or 90 feet plus an extra out. And the clock in baseball, how you win the game, is to get 27 outs. So you've got to be able to make those plays.
Hey, your presentation was good tonight, Ned. No errors on you tonight.
Presentation. That's what it's all about, David. 61 games to go. Presentation's the key.
That's right. We'll check in with you again tomorrow after the day game.
All right, buddy.
There he goes, Ned Colletti. And by the way, the Dodgers are on pace for a franchise record, 105 wins. That would tie the 1953 Brooklyn Dodgers. They are 15 games ahead of the Arizona Diamondbacks going into tomorrow's game, looking for the sweep over the Miami Marlins. Walker Buehler will be on the mound against Jordan Yamamoto, who is 4-0 with an ERA of 1.59. Morongo Casino Dodgers on Deck begins at noon, first pitch at 1:10. Thanks to Dave Magdaleno back at our Burbank studios. Thanks to Dwayne McDonald out here at Dodger Stadium. And thanks to the guest of honor tonight, Fernando Valenzuela, who we see every day here in the press box. But appreciate Fernando taking time out of his busy day to be our guest on the pregame show. So gracias, gracias, El Toro. I'll leave it right there. I'm like Mike Socha. I'll just leave it right there. Minimal Spanish. Once again, the final score. The Dodgers defeat the Marlins 10-6. Have a great night. See ya.